Hi, I'm Jamie Carragher, and you are listening to Across the Park podcast.
Welcome to Across the Park podcast, the only place you can hear banter and debate from both sides of Stanley Park, whether it be blue or red. Sponsored by Vare Clothing, Camper Kings UK, and affiliation with Betmate. Hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 18 of this season's Across the Park podcast on YouTube and audio on all your favourite podcast platforms. Myself, Ian Mills, and Andrew Price. We have the badge, the crest on our chest, the big tower, and with live birds on theirs is Teddy McGiven and Phil Roberts. Big thanks to our sponsors, as you heard in the intro, Camper Kings UK. It is the season to camper van. Get over to camperkings.co.uk. Please quote Across the Park podcast for a free bottle of bubbly. And some free insurance as well. Vare Clothing, vareclothing.com, quote ATP20 at checkout for 20% off. Our affiliation with Betmate, we'll talk more about on this week's show later in the week, which is Game On. Before then, we unfortunately, Pricey, have to talk football. The Reds are going to go first because they played first. Teddy, start with you, my man. Steven Gerrard came back with his Aston Villa side, and according to Phil and Gary's instant match reaction, which is still available on the channel, they were very, very stubborn.
Yeah, I mean, I think we expected that, to be honest. I think, you know, since he's took over there, I don't know how many games he's taken charge of now, whether it's five or six, but, you know, he's only lost one of them prior to playing us. And I think we did expect them to be, you know, quite stubborn opposition. You know, at the same time, I think, you know, Mike, watching the game, we were on top. You know, there was a lot of chances and quite a bit of what felt like last-ditch defending from them. But in terms of, you know, actually getting the job done, you know, we put all 3 points on the board. But, you know, in certainly it wasn't a walk in the park as such. You know, he's obviously came there, set them up to be difficult opposition. You know, he wasn't going there as a trip down memory lane. He obviously would have wanted all 3 points and make a bit of a statement on return to his former club. So, you know, it was vital that we got the points and basically continue the momentum that we've got. And, you know, we were on top. I think we were the better team. There was some disgraceful refereeing going on, if I'm being honest. And I think it could have been, you know, on another day, I think we could have had more, but, you know, fair play to them. It wasn't easy as such, though. What did you think, Phil?
Yeah, it's what I expected, Teddy. I think we said on the podcast on the week before, they play very compact. They give you space on the flanks. We've seen them do that in the previous games. So I expected us to be on top. I expected us to have a lot of ball. Some of our best players play down the flanks. But it was always going to be hard to find that killer pass and the pass that, you know, that led to a goal. And that's exactly how the game played out. We had a lot of ball, but we couldn't quite make it happen in front of goal. There were some long-range efforts. Sarr had one aiming for the top bin. Chamberlain had one. So that's kind of what I anticipated, really. Kind of went, but I did think because of the quality we've got in wide areas, we'd find a breakthrough. In the end, it came from a penalty, a stonewall penalty, at that, in my opinion. And obviously, we had the ability at the other end to keep them out.
Stonewall penalty? Oh, are you messing?
No, what? I'm not.
He kicked Tyrone Mings and then fell over.
Oh, he got his legs kicked.
I was expecting a little bit tonight, and I wasn't expecting that. This has kicked the show off right in the wrong direction for me. Boys, come on, that is not a penalty ever.
Oh, it's a stonewaller for me, though. Oh. I think we should have possibly have had another pen.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you do. I'm sure the wind blew someone over as well, and that was a free kick.
No, it wasn't a good performance. You know, there was plenty of occasions where it was like, what? How was he even made that decision there? You know, where you sort of like,
the ref.
Yeah.
I think Villa should have had a pen.
Yeah, I do.
I think they should have done. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. But, you know,
appeals, was that? They never appealed it. I think the ball was live and they tried to
keep it. Yeah, he got up to try and get it, didn't he? That's what it was.
Yeah, if he just sat there like that, I think it might have been a bit different.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know Millsy's always got a comment, you know, for Alisson and stuff, but at the moment, you know, there are some, like, actual brain shutdown moments where you think, what decision was he making there? You know, like, and when he flies out and he kicks that, it's just like, what have you done? Like, why are you trying to do that? And then the claw, you know, trying to claw it with his hands. I don't know.
Yeah,
just a bit.
Was it Matip? Yeah, Matip looked a little bit shocked that he came out, didn't he?
Yeah, I think it was fine that he came out, but then it was like when he's kicked it, it's also like he's kicked it with the wrong foot and kicked it in the wrong direction. Like the one place that he shouldn't have kicked it, he's also kicked it. It was like
it was the one in the first half as well, wasn't it? When he came out, Ashley Young.
Yeah,
he sort of was in no man's land. He knocked it past him.
He slipped. Yeah, then he lost his foot.
I know, but yeah. Still.
Yeah, it's rational. Well,
yeah.
Listen, I mean, as I say, it's maybe we're nitpicking a little bit. You know, it was always, as Phil said, it was always going to be a tough time. And, you know, I think we recognise that, you know, Villa have got a little bit more impetus than they had under the former manager since he's come in, and they've had a bit of reaction. And at the end of the day, we've got all 3 points. And that's the main thing, isn't it, Phil? You know, when we've seen, you know, when we've had in other instances where there's been, like, potential for rivals to drop points and we haven't capitalised or whatever, you know, it's vital that we just keep picking up our three, you know, and grinding this momentum out, that it feels like we've got a good good momentum.
Yeah, it's even harder this season because it's not just City, Chelsea are in the mix, even though right now they seem the most likely to fall away, but they're still there, and so, like, you just can't do it, you just can't be dropping points, and the team that wins this league will be the team that turns draws into wins when it's not looking likely. And that's what we're starting to do. Wolves was the same. Villa's another one, whether it be a penalty, fluke and Oggy or whatever. It's getting over the line, isn't it? And that's what we seem to be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just to sort of wrap it up in terms of the team, how important is it that we're starting to see, it looks like, although Klopp's rotating the defence a little bit, it seems like we've sort of settled a little bit in that midfield area now. I mean, if we think back to like the Brighton game and stuff, and we, you know, when we're talking, saying like what midfield at the moment, you need to get a settled midfield because we're rotating all different players with injuries and stuff. We're starting to see that, aren't we, with Henderson, Fabinho, and Thiago, and it's looking balanced.
Yeah, that's a tasty midfield, and it's unquestionably our first choice. I think that's always been the case, though. I just think injuries mean that we've had to rotate. Thiago's prone to an injury, Henderson picks one or two up, so, you know, fingers crossed. Let's hope it continues. But yeah, that midfield, Teddy, I like the look of it a lot.
Yeah,
it's got everything you need within it.
Yeah, and I think that's been, you know, the platform that we've seen, the sort of uptick in form and the improvements in momentum. So as you say, it's vital that we keep them fit, really, and manage them as well as we can. But yeah, no, it's as I say, vital win. It was a pleasing win, and you know what I mean? It was nice to see Gerrard back.
Yeah.
What did you make of the reception that he got? Because I've seen online that in game there was Steven Gerrard songs, and I think Phil, you mentioned it on the instant match reaction as well, that the cop was singing his name. And
well,
to me, I didn't expect it to go that far, really.
Well, the Annie Road started singing his name, and the cop actually drowned it out with chance of Liverpool. So that's kind of how it went. I heard a few people around the cop singing it, but more the Annie Road end. But yeah, they got drowned out, and for me, that's the wrong time to do it. Even potentially before the game was debatable, but after the game, go for it, which we did. You know, let him know he's loved, he's appreciated. We want him back one day. But while the game's in play, Teddy, not for me, though.
No, absolutely. I think beforehand, you can show, you know, appreciation and you know, and warmth from the fans towards him. And certainly after the game, you know, Adam Lallana came a couple of games ago, you know, at Anfield, and he got a brilliant reception. He walked right the way around the pitch, clapped, everyone gave him a great reception, and I think, you know, pre and post is maybe a time to do it. But once that whistle blows for 90 minutes, you know, there's no love lost. You don't want your players or your fans to be sort of given any quarter, do you? You want you know, everything to be focused on supporting us. So
Gerrard, he scored, he's gone mad.
Did you feel that way at Goodison last week?
Sorry.
Did you feel that way at Goodison last week when you were singing Benitez songs, or that a bit different?
Oh, no, that's a different kettle.
Also, when it suits, then I. When it suits, yeah. No, fair enough. I was just making sure. I was just asking. I didn't know whether it was like a thing or just like where it suits or what.
That's a way to help our team, which is just us keeping quiet about Gerrard is helping our team, and us singing about Rafa is helping our team because it winds your fans up.
I was just wondering whether that's a thing or not. You obviously, you know.
Oh, it's a thing. It's a thing. We're definitely going
to. What? It's a thing to sing the manager's name or not to?
Yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy to sing Rafa if it winds the Blues up and puts their players off and gets in his head and gets in the team talk and causes problems at Everton.
Didn't wind me up. I was. Me and Pricey were dead to the world at that time. Didn't wind us up. We were just. Okay. Anyway, I think we're going to move on. Anybody who wants to hear Gary's thoughts on the Liverpool game, the instant match reaction with Gary and Phil is available on the channel to have a look at. Phil did say on the chat on the instant match reaction that we are very close to 1,000 subscribers. So please, underneath where you're watching this video now, there will be a button where you can subscribe if you haven't. It helps us an awful lot. You'll see our sponsors are here helping out. It's going to one day put us back into a studio setting, which I know we've been asked about, which we're going to do again one day. And like Phil said as well, once you get to 1,000 subs, it allows us to go live. So if you do enjoy the instant match reactions, you enjoy the instant shows like Pricey and Judges on last week, what Marcel Brands, we can go live and take live questions as well. So that is the plan. So please subscribe. Pricey, unfortunately, Everton played this weekend. So we've got to talk about that. Crystal Palace 3, Everton 1, but a day removed from it now. Actually, yeah, just about a day removed. We could record now, 6 o'clock. Have you calmed down?
Not when I think about it. No, I'm still angry about it, to be honest. I know we're going to go in. We're rightly going to go in. We've had social media questions. You're wanting it to be a lot about the manager and stuff, and that's fair enough. And I'm going to say my piece when it comes up, but the players can't get away with the way they performed yesterday. We were second to everything. We didn't show no fight, no determination on the ball. It was like a hot potato. We didn't get hold of it. We didn't press as a team. We were going in ones and twos, letting Palace to play, you know, in between us in midfield especially. So yeah, I think we set up all wrong to start with, and that's all, you know, one part of it. But you can't let the players get away with that. The players were absolutely dreadful to a man. I don't know one player who came out of that off that pitch with a bit of credibility. And that's the players' attitude and determination for me. And if you contrast that with Arsenal last week, especially the second half of the Arsenal game last week Thursday, whatever was it now, Wednesday. Yeah. If you go into that, that was Monday, wasn't it? If you compare those two games, and it's like watching two different teams in terms of determination, quality. Look, I've said it before. We've got a real lack of quality within the squad and within the first 11. When there's a couple of injuries, especially, the quality is on the floor. And I think we're a mid-table team at best in terms of quality. But the determination, the application yesterday in comparison to the Arsenal game was just like chalk and cheese. And yet, as I say, the manager needs to take his responsibility for stuff. But the players can't get away with it.
No, I think you're spot on. And I was on the Liverpool live radio on Saturday, another one of our great affiliates. And I said, I ended my segment on there by saying, I've got no confidence that what we'll do on Sunday will be taking in Monday into Sunday, because that group of players have just let me down, let you down, let the fans down so many times. There's about four or five players there who must have seen that many managers off.
Yeah.
Including like when David Unsworth came a few years back and he was highly regarded. He was meant to be the next manager. He couldn't get a tune out of them. There's really top managers. Carlo Ancelotti, one of the best ever, set that team up last season to just try and nick a win every week. He couldn't get a tune out of them unless he brought his own men in. And look, I completely agree with you. That gang of players, and I've said it on this podcast, I've said it on instant match reactions, and I'll take this moment to apologise for some of my language on the instant match reactions, but they're not fit. They're not good enough to wear the shirt. They're not good enough at all. You look at a number of players there, it's all the time. It's every single time. I done a podcast with the Blue Boys Network about the Man City game a few weeks back where we went to Man City. And Guy, Mike, friends of the show, he said to me he had no faith in Everton beating Man City because that's not what Everton do. Everton are not one of those teams who will go to these teams and get points. And that, to me, sums it completely up. I just think that we're at a stage now, and the bigger picture probably is we'll come to the bigger picture on where we are as a club and how we do progress. But for me, I don't know if it is the manager, whether it's higher than the manager or it's down to the coach, staff and the players. I can't see an identity. And with Carlo, I could see an identity. Now, I didn't agree with it. He set us up really negative in home games, but I could see what he was doing. Roberto Martinez went the other way. Roberto Martinez went so far the other way, but I turned up every week knowing what he was trying to do, knowing the identity. What on earth is our identity? How do we play? What's our style? Oh, we had a message on Twitter, didn't we, calling us a defensive team who counter-attack, who can't defend or counter-attack. Mm-hmm. Is that's as close to it as I can. I can't agree with that message more. What is our identity?
I've not seen us as aimless as this. I said until since late 90s, under Walter Smith, we were aimless, and this is exactly the same. We just look like we're lost on the pitch. But, I mean, that, like you said before, that many players have seen off that many managers. So the same player's been asked to play four or five different ways over the last 3 or 4 years. So in terms of that, you can understand why the players might be a bit confused about certain things. But as you say, we don't set up at the start of a game knowing what we're going to do. I think what we are trying to do is we are trying to counter attack. I think that's clear, not clear to see, but you know, from the games where we have done better than others, which is a long time ago, that's how we won is by counter attacking, by absorbing the pressure and then getting the goals on it. But we're even too negative on the ball. So if you're going to counter-attack, then at least once you're on the ball, you need to be positive and you need to go in and take it to the other team. We're not even doing that. I mean, yesterday, we were just hoofing it. And for want of a better word, every time we got the ball, it was just a hoof into the channels. Felt sorry for Richarlison up front on his own. Why are you playing Richarlison up front on his own if your tactic is going to be long ball is beyond me and miss out your midfield, miss out your Greys and your Townsends, who are your counter-attacking players? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I think what he is trying to do is counter-attack, but we have just said it. We're on the ball. We're lost.
And it was depressing yesterday. We were half an hour in, and Sky flashed a stat saying 22% possession. Yeah. And then I think around 60 minutes in, we were 2-0 down, and another stat came up saying that Palace had like 9 touches in our box, and we had 1. In this is Crystal Palace.
Crystal Palace, who lost the last 3 games as well, and were low on confidence as well. You know, they were going into that game desperate for a win, and as I say, low on confidence. We made them look like Brazil. They were passing it through us so easily. It was unbelievable. And you know, these two next to us might laugh at it, but honestly, I don't even care. It was that bad. I don't even mind saying it. I'm not even trying to hide it. It was awful. And even I texted the WhatsApp group in the first 10 minutes saying this first 10 minutes has been a shambles, and it didn't get any better. The last 15, probably when Gordon come on from memory, I'm not saying it was up down to him, but around that time when he came on, we sort of had a go of it. But you shouldn't be 2-0 down with 20 minutes to go before you start having a go.
This is the theme. This is Everton. This is what we do this season. We don't turn up for the first half and then have a go in a second. Remember Wolves away? Wolves away was like watching two different teams. It was like a different team came out with blue shirts on in the second half. And I won't go as far as saying that happened yesterday, but again, we are just being set up so wrong. And I know we're going to come on to it, but it's... Oh.
What annoys me about that, if you're set up a certain way, what he doesn't do is he doesn't see it's not working after 15 minutes and try and change it. He waits till half time or he waits till 60 minutes before he tries to change something. So everyone could see after 15, 20 minutes yesterday it wasn't happening. You're going to say the word stubborn, Terry, probably. We've spoke about it before. He is stubborn. He shouldn't maintain what you're doing. If you're a manager, you can see it's not working. You're changing, you're trying to do something else. You don't stick with it in the hope that it does. And then when he does change it after the hour, that's when we start getting a bit of momentum. Right. Seems mad.
What did you do that was so different against Arsenal in terms of setup?
I don't think it was about the setup. It was about, like I said before, it was about the players and the way they react to stuff and when they're on the ball, how brave they are on the ball. I didn't think we played well against Arsenal, especially the first half. We didn't play well at all. It was just in that second half when we had a bit of battle about us, and we tried to have a go at them. So Arsenal was the same. We tried to hold back just on the ball. We were a bit more positive, I'd say, and we sort of played a little bit better. And when we closed down, the crowds were big
on Monday for Everton,
and we closed down in numbers against Arsenal. From, you know, and everyone was behind it, but it was just so disjointed. It was unbelievable yesterday.
I think you're saying that it wasn't the setup, and Millsy's saying we're set up so wrong. I think that's what Phil's getting at. It's like, what would you do different, Millsy? Because what you're saying there, the crowd was big. That to me is, it's not the setup then, it's the player confidence, isn't it? That's the key.
Well, Okay, well, for me, like I forget, we've got hammered on social media. I know we'll get there, but we're moving on quickly to the manager here. Richarlison cannot play as a lone striker. We got the best out of Richarlison when he played in a 4-3-3 in his first season, and I'm talking a three, and when he played in a 4-4-2 when he was right up there with Dominic Calvert-Lewin. Last season, we didn't get the best out of Dominic Calvert-Lewin. And if you sorry, Richarlison, because we got the best out of Dominic Calvert-Lewin instead. Richarlison was sort of sacrificed, and he hated it. He was headbutting our captain, trying to take the ball off him to take penalties. He was arguing with James Rodriguez, trying to take free kicks off James Rodriguez. He wants to be the man, but he cannot play as a lone striker. He can't. And yes, I understand he played quite well against Arsenal, and he got stuck in. To play him as a lone striker is suicidal. Can't do it. And then. I wouldn't have played a one. I'd have played a two.
Well, who?
I'd have brought Sengtosen back and to play with him, honestly, would have. I'd have played Sengtosen next to Richarlison that yesterday. I'd have gone a 4-4-2. And I think to play Andre Gomez behind him and to play Andros Townsend and Damari Gray so far off him was criminal. We paid so much respect to Crystal Palace. It's ridiculous.
I think, coming back to it, that If you're setting up with a lone striker, you've got to play differently. You know, it's not necessarily the fact that he's got a lone striker up there. It's the fact he's got a lone striker and we're at long balls open that he'll try and flip on. We're not playing to the strengths of the team, and that was the issue for me. Is that if you're going to play that way, you've got to adapt it, and then when it's not working, as I said, after 20 minutes, you've got to change it and find out what does work. It just wasn't working. It was terrible.
And that's what I mean. I can't see a plan, because if Decore was the number 10 yesterday and we were lumping into Decore, I'd sort of say I can see a little bit what he's trying to do. Abdoulaye Decore will win it and we'll win the second ball, or if he loses it, we'll go for the second ball. We played Andre Gomez at the 10.
I know we're going to assess Rafa generally in a minute, but just Rafa on this game. Everton are without the core of the spine of their team in
who?
Alan
and Mina. That's the best player in each position, isn't it? No grace for that.
Yeah, but it's not a one off, is it? Calvert-Lewin's been missing since the third game of the season. If he hasn't, he's not able to adapt to play without Calvert-Lewin and play a different system without Calvert-Lewin in the team, and he hasn't got to grips with that already. There's something wrong there. You can't keep blaming the fact that your striker's not there. Maybe for one game and you get beat, you think, well, our striker didn't play. I'd say he's only played three league games this season. Surely he can change the way we play to adapt to that. The fact that Alan was missing yesterday, but he hasn't been missing before that, and we've been just as bad. So I'm not gonna blame the injuries. I'm gonna blame, to a certain extent, the manager, but I think the players are awful.
That's what I was going to say there. I mean, there's one thing setting them up, and you know, Benitez sort of copping the flak for not changing it when you can see it's not working after 20 minutes. That's on the manager, because you've got to do something different. But if he's played Richarlison up there, you know, how much of responsibility it is on the player? Is it the players being told whack it up, hope for balls into dead areas, or you know, if they've been told to try and play the ball and they're not, they're just basically clearing lines because there's no confidence on the ball, because that's where it's like, you know, becomes like a, you know, again, is it a player issue or is it a manager issue? I get them not changing it. That's on the manager. But this, from the first whistle, if 20 minutes has just been hitting dead balls into, you know, shitty areas and expecting Richarlison to chase everything, you know, how much of that is down to the players?
All right, well, Fabian Delph played for Manchester City. Michael Keane and Mason Holgate played in a Marco Silva team, which wasn't long ball. Seamus Coleman's played in a Roberto Martinez team.
It was a long ball team.
Yeah, but when he signed for Everton, we didn't play that way, and that's why Keane really struggled under Marco Silva. You're asking me the question whether it's the manager or the players. I've seen these players play in a number of different setups, so I don't... Yeah, I agree with Pacey that the players aren't good enough, but the way we're set up and the way we're playing is on the manager.
You just said Michael Keane. I've seen him in a Marco Silva team, and he was shite in a Marco Silva team.
He struggled, but I've also seen him have decent games at times. I think Michael Keane's shite anyway. I'm not going to say he's played shite every single game he's played for Everton, because that would be a lie. I don't rate Michael Keane that much, really, but I've seen him have good games, of course I have. And I've seen him sort of start moves from the back, and have spells in his career where he's been quite a good player for us. It'll never last with Michael Keane, because he's not that good overall, but it's not... Benitez isn't telling Michael Keane to do one thing and Keane's doing another. That's not what's happening here.
Michael Keane's playing a diag to the right wing every time he gets the ball. Every time Michael Keane gets the ball, or 9 times out of 10, he's looking for the right wing and he's knocking a long ball to the right wing. That's what he's doing. He's been told to do that. But then on the other hand, he's been told to do that because he's shite on the ball. I wouldn't trust Mike Pickford rolling out to Michael Keane and Michael Keane doing something with it, trying to pass through midfield. So it's a catch 22. He's playing.
He's normally them in the channels, aren't he?
Benitez is dealing with what he's got to a certain extent. But on the other hand, I do agree, if it's not working in a game, you've got to be able to change it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay, but before Phil, you're muted, by the way. You're trying to talk, but you've muted yourself. Before we move on, I know Phil's got loads of social media questions, and we might come on to it, but just a spring one on your place here. I think we've always said on this podcast that no Evertonian is right or wrong. They're always entitled to their opinions, but the scenes in the away end, singing some anti-manager songs... For me, as much as I'll come on this podcast now and I will say that I don't want him to be there, but I don't know the benefit at this point of singing those songs for me.
I don't see what good it's gonna do. It came from the substitution of Richarlison, didn't it? And everyone's got their own opinion on that substitution. I wouldn't have made the substitute if I was him. I would have brought another forward on to go alongside him. But saying that, and I did say it yesterday, if anyone was coming off, he's as good as anyone. Do you know what I mean? It's not like he's a star. It's not Liverpool bringing off Salah and he's going to guarantee your goals. He's scored 3 all season. So if someone needed to come off, I don't see why it wasn't him. But I wouldn't, saying that, I wouldn't have brought him off myself personally. But the singing, yeah, I'm not into that. As you say, everyone's entitled to it. I can't see Goodison being that loud singing anti. No, I think it's because it's an away fans and it's, and he must have been pissed off going all the way down to London yesterday. So you can sort of get the reasons why they've done it. But I prefer we never.
Yeah. Fair enough. All right, Phil, bring you in. I know we've been hammered on the social media. I think unfortunately for any Reds who are watching, or maybe fortunately if you're looking for a laugh, I think we're about 70%, 30% on the blue social media this week, aren't we, Phil?
Probably more, mate. And it was all just, Rafa and Everton being in bad form and people being angry with it. I'm not going to read out everyone. I'll pick a few, which basically gives us an idea of the whole theme. So Andy Keelan messaged us saying, if the manager's lost a fan base, lost some of the players, and more importantly, lost the overwhelming majority of the games he's played, how does he keep his job? Sean Pugh said, we are a counter-attacking team who cannot defend or counter-attack. Interesting this week to hear if you all defend Benitez. Another EFC will do for me says, how long does Rafa have left? Darren O'Day, this is a joke, mate. No consistency, no fight, no passion. You know what? I was all for giving Rafa time, but that sub taking Richarlison off was the nail in the coffin for me. What the hell? Me personally, I think he's lost the dressing room. Looking forward to the pod this week.
Can I just stop that one? And I think that's a really good message because he's indicated there, Darren, and he interacts with us on social media all the time. He's indicated there's been a button push for him there where he's now turned. He was up for giving this manager a chance. And I think a lot of Evertonians, I think the majority of Evertonians were willing to give this manager a chance. And between then and now, I think a lot now, maybe not the majority, because I've seen on Monday the Arsenal game that the majority didn't go with things, so. But I think a lot of Everton fans have had some sort of button pressed where they now are not backing this manager. And what I will say, and Pricey might disagree here, I think as soon as you lose an away end like that, he's gone. I don't think he can ever, ever come back from having those songs sung at him on Sky Sports yesterday.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. Whether it's this week or whether it's in the next few weeks, I think it's a ticking time bomb now. Whether it was always ticking time bomb, but as you say, as soon as the away end of that vocal about it, it happens, doesn't it? The only thing I've got about that, I'm not wanting to keep Benitez. I'm not particularly, going to be calling for his head. The only thing, the issue is that, and I'm going back to it again, these players have seen off 4 or 5 managers, same set of players. So I don't think he's particularly lost the players because the Arsenal game, I've never seen Fifa like that in ages from Everton, from the Everton players. So to say he suddenly lost the dressing room after a week, I think is probably a bit harsh. But that's my only concern. If we get rid of him, it's that many dead wood in the squad. the next manager's going to have the same issue as he's got and the last four managers have had, is that the players are not good enough and they're not fighting hard enough for the blue shirt, ultimately. You know, that's my view on it. I just think, I know it's easier to get rid of a manager than it is players, and I get that argument as well. But how far do you go? As an owner, it might not be Benitez. It might be like you get rid of him tomorrow and bring in another manager next week. But at some point, we're going to have to say we are giving this manager time. It's going to have to happen. I'm not saying Benitez is the person to do it with, but it's going to have to happen at some point because that's it. You're not going to get a manager and he's going to get a tune out of these players. It's not happening. It needs a clear out and it needs new investment coming in.
You've hit the nail on the head there with what you just said, that you're not sure whether Benitez is it. I completely agree with what you're saying, that at some point in this journey, a manager has to be backed with time and he has to be allowed to be given these spells where it's not great on the pitch and you're losing games. This manager was never going to be afforded that time. I said when he came, it was always going to end in chaos. He was the wrong choice. And the only way he would have survived as Everton manager is by not letting it get to this point, and we're now at the point.
Is by beating Liverpool is what would have basically been.
I think it would have
got them fans who were a little bit still too quick to sort of think, yo, if he'd have won the derby, it's a different kettle of fish. It's
all it would have helped.
But you could have said that coming out of Arsenal. You know, coming out of Arsenal last week,
that was the players' own pride. That performance.
The 27-minute thing is what I'm talking about. No, hardly any fans got up to walk out. So that was the fans showing that, look, we're willing to give it a go. Yeah. So the fact that's turned. So like as Miller said, Darren said, it's a button that was pushed, and I sort of feel a bit like that myself watching that yesterday. Is like we had that Arsenal and show what we could possibly do in terms of commitment from Arsenal, but at the end of the day, we're going back to this terrible way of playing, and these players who have got no bottle about them. But and then I'm going again to the fact that, is it the players, not the manager? It's a mess. It's a mess.
I think Millsy's right. I think he has said it was always going to be a recipe for chaos. And when you've got, like, you know, the history there, it's so hard to turn the fan base onto him. And that it was always going to be as soon as you hit a bad run of form. But that goes down then to Mashiri. Where's the decision making that thinks Benitez was ever the right appointment? You know, we've got to eventually find a manager that we're going to give time to, that we know we can't back in the market. We have to have a manager that the fans will accept. We might hit a bad run of form. Benitez was never going to be that man.
You said that some of the fans, you know, most of the fans were willing to give him time, but the truth is he weren't, and you weren't, because it's being proved now. You might have tried to tell yourself.
Yeah, we were willing to.
You never win.
Willing to give him a go as long as it didn't get to this point, basically. Yeah. That's it. If we were seventh, eighth, sort of having a go, it wouldn't be like this. It's the fact that we've dropped off at this point. We've been terrible. And all them losses we've had this season against teams we should be beating, that's the issue.
100%. 100%. You look at this fixture list, Phil, and the results. I mean, we've won two games since September in a run that included QPR, Aston Villa, Watford, Wolves, Brentford, Crystal Palace. You're telling me that Everton without Dominic Calvert-Lewin and Yerry Mina shouldn't be beating those teams?
Why do you think you should be beating them, though? What right have you got to be beating them? You finished 10th and 12th in the last two seasons.
Because the majority of teams, I just said, are finished below 10th, and there's one in the division below.
Well, Wolves are actually doing all right again this season. They're starting to put a good run of form together.
They'll do nothing. Sam and Conor McGregor, yeah.
I think Terry's got a point, though. We're a bad squad. We've got a mid-table at best squad. I agree with Millsy. Yeah. We should be beating Palace. We should be beating Brentford.
We should be beating them, but not with this team.
Not with this team. With the amount of money we put into it, with the credentials of the manager we've got, some of the players on paper that we've got, we should be beating them. But we've proven that we are not good enough, and that's where I keep coming down to. It's going to take a couple of years to get rid of some of that deadwood in the squad.
This is all we ever say. That's all we ever say. It's just going to keep taking time. I feel like that's the third or fourth summer now. I just don't know where it ends.
But you haven't given it time. You've had six managers in 6 years.
I think Carlo would have been given as much time as he wanted. He would have been the exception. And now you're looking square in the face now that And I'll put money on the line. When Rafa goes, it'll be Duncan Ferguson. And that's not me saying I want that. That's who it'll be.
What makes you think that then?
We be given time.
I think the board will see this as another window or two where they can't spend money, and they will want someone on the touchline who can relate to a fan base who can sometimes get angry. Very, very similar to when Chelsea had their transfer ban and they put Frank Lampard on the touchline.
Yeah, but we're talking about a manager who needs windows. I wouldn't trust Duncan Ferguson to build.
And I agree. And that's why I said it's not necessarily who I want. But
till the end of the season, I could see it.
Yeah, I would bet with someone now yeah. that if the next few games don't go well, it will be Duncan Ferguson.
Yeah, okay. I can see it till the end of the season, definitely.
Well, question on that then.
He will
be given time. Of course, he'll be given time, Ferguson.
If he's brought in as an interim manager and it's made clear he's an interim manager till the end of the season, yeah. I can see that happening. And then we've got 6 months to hopefully put some sort of plan in place that we definitely haven't got at the minute.
The thing is,
what you need to do there. Sorry, Terry, I will let you jump in. I know you're dying too. Just to finish off a place, he said, it is an interesting twist to it, Pricey. If that scenario happens and then we appoint somebody in July or June, does Duncan Ferguson then have to leave Everton Football Club for you? I know it's a big question,
does,
but
you know,
he's the constant, isn't he?
I think if you're putting a new manager has to come in and be able to, when you're bringing a manager like that, you have to say to him, bring in who you need to bring in and get rid of who you need to get rid of. That's what you've got to do. You can't bring a manager in, expect the manager to work and say to him, oh, but by the way, your assistant's going to be this fella who's been sitting here for the last 4 or 5 years.
I think you have to
get rid of him. As hard as that might be and whatever. And he has to know that as well at the start, I think. You have to make it quite clear, look, just see us through to the end of this season. If the new manager wants you, there's a job for you. If he doesn't want you, you're going to have to move on, or even move down to the youth team or whatever, if that's what the new manager would want.
What is there any concern that if you do get rid of Rafa and you give Ferguson it basically to the end of the season or whatever, do you not think that there's some players in that team, the ones who you'd argue are probably your better players, who start looking at it thinking this, like speaking to their agent and saying...
I wouldn't be disappointed to lose anyone.
No, me either.
I wouldn't be disappointed to lose any of those players.
Calvert-Lewin?
No.
Calvert-Lewin probably. I wouldn't want to lose Calvert-Lewin. There's any Calvert-Lewin.
He's the one who won't go, probably.
Calvert-Lewin, probably Calvert-Lewin, Decore and Gray because of what he's done.
Yeah.
Anyone else can go for me. They're three players. Richarlison can go, yeah. I think he's overrated, Richarlison.
Take them all. Terry, take them all, honestly.
I don't want any of them.
Do you know what? If this was chat manager, I'd go back to the last save. It's been a joke.
here's the one I see happening. Rafa gets sacked. You bring Ferguson in till the end of the season. He improves the team because there's a bit of heart, a bit of passion. The fans get behind it. You go into next season and you go, do you know what? He deserves a chance. Then he starts losing games. And then you go, do you know what? We can't sit. We can't, like, he's got nothing to fall back on. You know the way Ancelotti's got, like, a track record to fall back on? The fans will just go, do you know what? He's got no track record to fall back on. And then he'll get sacked.
It's the Solskjaer thing. I think it's got to be. We can't. If we do that, we can't go into the next season with him, no matter how well he does. It needs to be a definite thing that he's only staying till the summer. United done it with Solskjaer, and it was supposed to be the summer. He had a good few games, and he suddenly gave him a 3-year contract. But I don't agree with the fact that you've got to bring a manager who's won something. I don't go with that. I think it's okay to bring him on.
I think for your fan base, you do. Because now, after 6 years of Mascheri and spending £500 million, for someone to turn around and say, we're getting a young up-and-coming manager.
That's what we need. That's what David Moyes was, though, wasn't he?
You've done that with Silva, though, and it hasn't worked. And it was all about the project then. Judgey was talking about, like, you know, brands coming in, it's a project, we're all focused, we're all on the same page and stuff. And that works until stuff gets hard. And when you've already gone through that, can you reset the clock and go, right, it might be another 4 years until we're challenging for Europe?
So I'd rather bring in a young manager who's unproven, who's not unproven in terms of, you know, he's set up a club before, he's got a style of play and he's a decent manager, but he hasn't won loads. I'd rather do that than bring in a Mourinho. I wouldn't want Mourinho to come into Everton.
I think it'd be, you know, and I, I've sort of said it when you before you got Benitez, like Potter or someone who's a bit Premier League proven in terms of, you know, worked in tough sort of circumstances, hasn't had a lot of money, but has set up a team to play well, I think is a better bet than basically, as you say, a Mourinho. Yeah.
We used to do it with Brendan Rodgers, didn't you? And I know he had his shortcomings in the end, but he done well. I thought he'd done well at Liverpool, considering where he'd come from. Do you know what I mean? It's that type of manager that I want.
There's coaches out there. You've mentioned Graham Potter. The other one is the Ajax manager, Ten Hag. He jumped out of a crack at the Premier League, I think. There's coaches out there who, look, they're all going to be rolling the dice. It's all going to be, it may work and it may not, but I'm completely with Pricey now. If someone said to me, there's a Jose Mourinho or there's a Ten Hag, I'd take like a Ten Hag, honestly. Yeah, I'd take the project now, honestly.
Yeah. And then you look back at Marco Silva and it was, you know, pretty bad at the time. But then you do wonder, we finished eighth, you know, because we gave him more time. Was that the right thing to do? Yeah, it was because we were expecting to finish fifth and fourth or whatever we expect. I can't even remember at that time. Finishing eighth wasn't acceptable to us, so we got rid of him. But was that, I don't know, it might have been the right choice. I'm not saying it was or wasn't.
He was making time. Yeah, that 2019 window, and I'm the same as you, Price. Yeah, I've looked back at this when I close my eyes of a night time, and I try and go into that, and I think about Everton. I've thought about this 2019 window, and then you think he wanted Zaha, he wanted Decore, and he wanted to sign Zuma on loan, and we also lost Idrissa Gueye. Imagine keeping Gueye, getting Zuma, Decore, and Zaha in that summer. Instead, he had the Dutch Wayne Lineker signing John Philip Gebauen for him. It's a Moise Keane, and I think he was let down. And I'm not saying he would have been the answer, but I am moving towards back to that level now. Someone needs to be given a 5-year contract, maybe with the support of a director of football. Maybe you do go back to that model and you have a coach and a director of football. That will only work for me if Farhad Moshiri says, boys, it's on yous now.
I was just about to say that all boils down to Moshiri just relinquishing that control of the pitch and just saying, look, the pitch isn't my forte. I've brought in the people to do the pitch. I'll do the background. I'll get this, you know, whatever he does in the background, but the pitch is you two. You two sort it out. And I'll be happy with that.
Well, Brendan Rodgers is... People are starting to say, can he take Leicester any further now? They've dropped off this season. I think that's the type of manager Everton needs, actually, because if you take on too much of a project... You're talking about, I think, the Everton fans and board have got a history of saying, well, we've got no reason to back this player, but based on what? You need something to base it on, in my opinion. Someone like a Brendan Rodgers is going to have a history of producing.
Brendan Rodgers isn't taking the Everton job from Leicester.
I'm just saying a player like that, Teddy. Someone who you can trust.
I know what you mean. I agree.
To back him. You can't just take someone who's got nothing behind them, because you'll just give up on him too.
But we're at that stage now, and I'm not saying we're as bad as we were before Moyes came in, but as a fan base, you get the feeling we're at that stage now that we were then with Moyes, is that Moyes was good. It was like, yeah, just let's see what he's got. Bring him in, let's see what he's got. The thing that Moyes had is instant bounce, which got fans on board straight away. We had, I think it was second or third season, we were like 16th, 17th from memory. We had a bad season, but he put that in the bank because he'd give us such a bounce. So I think if a new manager does come in and we have a decent season, hopefully... We can try and get behind him as a manager, and I think we're at that stage now where it's not about bringing in a Mourinho. It definitely is about bringing in a young, hungry manager who's got a bit about him.
Is that next managerial appointment almost like the key to probably the next 5 to 10 years of Everton?
Feels like that, yeah. Now that brand has gone, it feels that way, yeah.
I'm not quite sure about David Moyes. What you said there about David Moyes in that third season, I think we as fans give Moyes that third season or the second season, maybe where we finished 17th, because he had someone else's team. And I think this new coach, if it happens for us, we'd also see that he's got someone else's team. I mean, I'd like to say I will be patient. Probably won't be. Probably on the podcast next year, won't fucking pot it out. But I think as a fan base, we do. If we do get this young coach who's got a plan, I think we probably do need to. Similar to what you said there, like we were with David Moyes when he had a bad time. Got to be patient.
Yeah. Our expectations have got the better of us as well, I think as fans. And I'm to blame as much as anyone else. And I mean the expectations from a couple of years ago when we were like, no, it's time to push on. We're ready. We're nowhere near ready and we needed to give it more time. But
let's just end the Everton bit there. Look, I think Pricey, I think he's dead man walking. What about you?
I agree. And I think you're right. I think once the away fans are that vocal about it, it's only a matter of time. And it might, as I say, it might not be this week, but he won't last the season.
Okay. Reds, one of my friends in work, he listens all the time, and he's asked me to ask you today about the shambles of a Champions League draw, which eventually you ended up with Inter Milan. What on earth happened?
Do you know what? It's like when you see that type of thing and you think, you know, this is the premier football competition in the world with millions of pounds behind it and stuff. And then the organisers of the draw, which has been weeks in advance and stuff planned, can't even get the draw right. It just makes you think, what's happening here? You know, like, what is going on? Like, where that can even happen?
What was it just a case of no one putting the name in, the proper names in the hat? Did you say it before?
Yeah, I haven't actually seen all of the ins and outs because I was working, but apparently it's something that Man U weren't included in the correct pot or something, or weren't included at all in the pot. So we've lost Millsy there. I don't know where he's just gone. They weren't included in the pot. So it basically got to the point where they'd done all the draws, and then I think they were in the situation where they were like, actually, you know, we can't actually finish the draw. So then it was like, we're going to have to redo it. So we ended up with Red Bull for our first draw, which we were all pleased about. And then obviously we pulled Inter subsequently, which I'm not gutted about or not, but
Man United were in a pot because they drew PSG.
And they were in the wrong pot.
Yeah, there was some early conspiracy, like it being done on purpose to try and bring Ronaldo v Messi for the last ever time. Don't know if there's anything in that, like, but obviously, yeah, got redone. Teddy, we've already beat the best team in Italy, haven't we? So
yeah.
And
not only did we beat them, they were absolutely terrible at home and away, if I'm honest. So, yeah, I mean, it is one of them. It's, you know, as I say, it's a proper shambles that UEFA can't even organise their own draw, but it is what it is. And subsequently, we've been drew against Inter. I'll be honest, I think, you know, the way that we've gone through that group stage there, which is very unlike us to sort of go through, you know, comfortably. I think is that the first time that an English team's won every group game, isn't it?
So
you know, we've gone through the group stage there, we should fear no one in that competition at the moment. I think over two legs we're more than a match for any team that you care to name, and not only that, I think a couple of the other ties, like, you know, there's going to be some of the bigger names going up against each other and stuff. So I'm okay with Inter. I think we've, you know, Italian football now is not, I don't want to sort of count our chickens, but I think over two legs we should have more than enough.
There was only one team in the pot to fear, really, Terry, and that was PSG. As long as we avoided them, there was nothing to worry about. I know you might have an opinion on them as well, but they were obviously the most dangerous team, weren't they?
Yeah, theoretically on paper, I think Bayern Munich, well, I know we couldn't necessarily get them. I think Bayern Munich, you know, they're a good side, and in terms of the entire competition, they're probably the ones that I've probably most got my eye on in terms of thinking, you know, might be the danger. But PSG, for me, you know, like, they can be outworked easily. You know, that front three, like the way that they set up and they do nowhere. I think over two legs, I just don't see PSG sort of beating Liverpool over two legs. I just don't think that they would.
Teddy, can I give it a quick would you rather? Would you rather win the Champions League this season or the Premier League?
The Prem.
Prem.
Really? That simple?
Yeah, because...
Because you look at Man City, who are desperate, who've won the Premier League, and I say this because you have now, and they are so desperate to have what you've had.
Yeah, but, you know, not the thing is, like, although we won it, it was also in a bizarre season where we couldn't really properly celebrate it, you know, in terms of and really have that moment with the fans. And it's like, I'd like us to win it where we can have that, you know what I mean? And to be there at the last home game of the season and see us get the trophy and stuff, which was denied to the fans. So, you know, I've seen us win European Cup finals, I've been there when we've won it. So, for me, you know, winning the league and really sort of cementing ourselves as under Klopp as a team that's been, you know, has won two titles under him, and Champions League. You know, it's like that's the thing. That's the one that I think every Red would argue they want more.
Good job. It's not a would you rather, Mills, and we're going to win both, isn't it?
Probably will. just to sum this season up, you probably will. And then Big Sam will come in April and save us.
United are on 20 titles as well. Don't want to bring that up, but I want that back.
Yeah.
Okay. What are you on?
19.
So crap that.
22 would be nice, wouldn't it? Double the Blues.
Right, so the social media, look, the social media was massive, Everton. So we apologise to any Reds who didn't enjoy that as much as Terry and Phil did. But about 11 minutes left, so we're just going to try and get the previews in. There's two games for both sides coming up. Pricey, if I could on Thursday, I would null and void this game. I seriously would. Chelsea away, and then we've got Leicester at home on Sunday. Quick previews from you, my man.
Null and void. Would you take a 1-0 loss?
Honestly, send the cleaners.
I'm dreading it. I'll be honest. I'm dreading it. Yeah, you said. I think it was off air. You might have been on air when you said Everton are just not one of those teams that go to a top four and get a win. We're not a team anyone fears, and it's just going to be one of those. I think we're getting embarrassed. To be honest with you, the way I'm feeling at the minute, I'm dreading it. Honestly, I'm dreading it. And then that goes into Leicester, and then confidence is low, and then you've got big games against Burnley and Newcastle. It's a bad December.
An interesting question is, and I'll be the voice of doom here, like always, but you've mentioned Burnley there, and we will touch upon it next week when we're going to do our final episodes of the year next week. The Burnley game, where is the tunnel? It's at the away end, isn't it? The away end.
Oh, in the corner, isn't it? Yeah.
Can you imagine the visuals if that goes wrong?
Oh no!
Right, these are for this manager. These two games are huge.
Yeah, they are. Yeah. But how do you think he'll set up against Chelsea? I mean, we were talking about our lack of identity we've got. It's obviously what he's going to do. He's going to try and stay compact. But what are we on the ball? We've got to be better on the ball. The Man City game. It's what we've done every time we got the ball. We just knocked it back in like a training game, and then it was like attackers versus defenders.
Here's what I'd do, and there's going to be people in the comments who aren't happy, and I understand it. I'd go, me and you up front, Teddy in goal, Phil at the back, and I'd write it off, honestly. I've got no hope at all going into that game.
It's damage limitation, isn't it?
Look, I know Evertonians are watching this, and they're probably wanting some sort of... And that's why it's great to have people like Judge on the podcast. Judge's instant match reaction last week at the Arsenal game, where he was so for the team. And that's why it's great that we have the split. But for me, I am up to there with it. And I'm going into this. It's possibly one of the worst games you could ask for, because Chelsea are now behind Liverpool, where they cannot drop any more points. Because if Liverpool put space in between you, and we've seen this, you don't catch them. So Chelsea are now one of the worst teams that you want to play. And then enter Everton.
Burnley got a point against them, though, didn't they?
Yeah. With Chelsea, they're very, very organised. I think you can sort of, you know, unsettle them. But if you let them have loads of the ball, I think you should. It's going to be a bit of a painful one for you. Because I think
chasing shadows.
Yeah. If we do, what if we come away with? What if we? I know we won't. Hypothetically, what if we come away with a win? The players look up for it. Is it back to? Oh, he's got them back on board.
Depends what you follow up with, isn't it? The game after.
It's just. I can't see us getting anything. If you ask them for predictions, I'll say Chelsea all day.
The thing with Tuchel is he's made them hard to beat, and that's the main difference that he's made. But Lukaku's been injured a lot, and without him, they're not really scoring many goals, are they? So you can't keep them out. You can put.
He's fit again now, though, isn't he? He's fit again now. Yeah,
just in time.
He was on the bench on Saturday, so you absolutely know what's going to happen. And just the rub price he's facing it, Ross Barkley's going to score as well. And the inside joke there is Pricey was never a Ross Barkley fan.
No,
but Pricey
never.
And Leicester have hit form just as they come to Goodison Park on Sunday as well. So
yeah.
A quick look ahead to that. Are they another one of those teams that's probably the worst time to play?
Yeah, potentially. I think... What might happen is I think we might have Duncan Ferguson in charge by come Sunday. And I think it might be a similar case of, I know we're going to talk about it in the next show, but a similar case of what it was when we played Chelsea that time when Ferguson came back and the crowds were sort of up for it. I can see that happening come Sunday. I can see him being in charge. And if that is the case, then maybe we can get a bit of a bounce. But regardless of whether he is or whether Benitez is in charge, that is a huge game. I think that's a massive game. And I can't even judge how we're going to do it. If you contrast Arsenal to Crystal Palace and the fight we had against Arsenal, compare it to Palace, I couldn't even tell you how we're going to do, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it'd be interesting that one. If you obviously you don't get a result against Chelsea and Benitez is still in charge, a home game. I know you're talking about the away fans were toxic towards Benitez. What will be I know it, like you didn't quite get the walkout you were expecting, but that was more against the ownership as opposed to Benitez, wasn't it? It'd be interesting to see what the home fan sort of atmosphere is like.
Yeah.
I don't think the home fans will ever go. I mean, I remember the protest in 2016 against Roberto Martinez, and it was more after the game. Some fans stayed behind, and during the game, they were with the team. I don't think Goodison would ever get really, really toxic unless it got really bad. And by really bad, I mean if we're looking at the trapdoor in the ice. I think that's the only time it would get really bad. I think Sunday wouldn't be toxic.
Home fans are usually a boo. They'll boo a substitution or at the end or at half time. They'll boo. There'll definitely be no anti Benitez songs. I can't see nothing like that at all.
No. Okay, but Price, you've just said there that you think Duncan could possibly be in charge.
Yeah, I think it's got potential.
If that happens, my man, me and you, Breakfast Club, Sunday morning, in the Spoons, Walton Road, and everybody is welcome to join us. Phil, moving on to the Reds, you've got a couple of games yourselves, starting on Thursday, I believe, as well. Phil's on mute. Let's start with Terry. Terry, Thursday, where are we?
Yeah, Newcastle Thursday, obviously, okay. Under new ownership now, and I don't think it's quite been the sort of, you know, the bounce that maybe that the Newcastle fans are expecting, you know, after the new ownership, new management coming in and all that, but, you know, at the same time, you don't want to open that door, and you know, Liverpool will be a big scalp if they can get it, you know, and their players and their manager will be looking at it. If we can get a result against Liverpool, it could galvanise and kickstart that sort of, you know, that sort of swing under like a new chapter for them. So I think we've got to go into that game, you know, fully prepared to fight and win all 3 points. And, you know, as I always say, I fully expect us to win every game we go into because we're certainly capable and good enough. But, you know, I don't want us to be almost, you know, taking it lightly just because they've had, you know, some poor performances and poor results recently in Newcastle. I think, you know, we've got to go into that game fully mindful that when we play them, we will be a big scalp and they'll be trying to do everything in their power to make sure that they take some points off us.
I think they're going to come to play us scared, to be honest, Terry, because they've just been beat 4-0. And obviously, when that happens, you don't want it to happen twice, do you? So I think, you know, they're going to try and be resolute. I don't think they're really going to go for it too much. I think they'll be frightened of getting spanked twice on the bounce. Don't know if they're set up to try and play like that, to be honest. Eddie Howe, for that matter. He doesn't play like that as a manager, does he? It's not his fault.
No, but in the likes of like St. Maximin, or whatever it is. In the type of him, you've got a very, very willing runner, you know, very explosive and powerful, who can run them channels that we know clubs like to try and exploit against us at home. You know,
that side too.
Yeah, so that's where we've got to be careful, you know what I mean? Because it's like, he will give them so much legs into them areas. And if you can sort of do, you know, an Everton and hit hopeful balls into them areas and with the likes of him, you know, in there sort of.
Been waiting
well,
to throw yeah, that what in.
What a show.
One ball side, you know what I mean? So, but that cuts out our midfield sort of, you know, that, which is what we rely on to keep that pressure, you know, keep teams pegged back and stuff. So I'm not saying I expect Newcastle are going to, you know, come to Anfield and turn us over or not, and I don't, but at the same time, you know, I just think we've always got to be, you've just got to make sure that we start well and we don't sort of take our foot off the gas. Remember when obviously we smashed Man U and then, you know, we had Brighton and it was like, it was almost too, it felt too easy at the first 20 minutes and then we let them grow into the game. Don't want that, you know, like that type of complacency to creep in.
I can imagine how though saying to St. Maximin, you know, don't be leaving your left back isolated against, you know, Trent and Salah. So I think because you've just been battered, I think they'll be too cautious, mate. I think they'll be terrified of Trent and Salah doubling up on them. I think they're wide attacking players who could damage us. We'll probably be looking to put a shift in defensively. I just see us I see it being like 2-0, mate. I'm going to say 2-0 on that game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think you get much argument out of me. I think we probably will win the game comfortably. I'm arguably going to say 3-0. I think at home, I think we can sometimes play such scintillating football that I think if we start the game well and we get on top and we keep it up, it could be, you know, a very comfortable victory. But no complacency, Liverpool 3-0.
Okay, and then we go into a tougher game, don't we, at the weekend against Spurs, who have been quite inconsistent this season. I think they've lost 5 or 6 games. And mainly against, like, I know United beat them, Arsenal beat them, Chelsea beat them. Seems like they're struggling against the top sides.
Yeah, but obviously, you know, it's at Spurs and under Conte that, you know, you've sort of got to confine, like, the previous, you know, form a little bit to the record box, haven't you? You know, like, I sort of watched them against Leeds the other weekend. They were diabolical the first half, but then the second half, they were a team reborn. You know, like, they were literally chasing everything, fighting for everything, and they got, you know, what they needed. And it was, I think, under him, they've certainly got players that can hurt you. You know what I mean? If they can get a system that's working and they can get the ball down and you let them play. I know Kane's not really in great form at the moment, but he's still a top player. You know, Son's a top player. Moura, there's players there in that side that I think, you know, are very, very capable players. And, you know, if you let them sort of build up a head of steam, they can hurt you. So, you know, I don't think it'd be an easy game as such, but, you know, touch wood, Spurs have been a pretty fortuitous side for us to play, you know, over the last couple of seasons, certainly. So, you know, I think we, you know, we've more than got enough to go down there and beat them on their patch. But, you know, not taking for granted the Newcastle game, you know, December's always such an important month. And if we can beat Newcastle and Spurs and set ourselves up going into that Christmas period with, you know, wins under our belt throughout December, it's starting to look very, very, very good. So I really do hope that, you know, we do carry that sort of form in. And do you expect many changes to the side, given that we have sort of not really seen a lot of rotation in the midfield?
Not for them games, Terry, no. Got a while now before Champions League.
With it being Thursday, Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, Klopp will take one or two people, you know, maybe one or two changes, but I don't think we'll change it for Spurs. I think I see full strength for Spurs. Maybe you'll see, I don't know, one of the front three, and maybe one of the midfields has changed for Newcastle, but not on wholesale.
I think you're right. I think maybe one forward and one mid, maybe a change. You might see maybe Oxlade-Chamberlain coming to the midfield or something, possibly against Newcastle, and maybe you might rotate the defence a little bit again. You know, and see, maybe you might see. I can't even remember his name now. The lad we signed from Red Bull, Kanate. I'd maybe see him come in against Newcastle just to give you a little bit more power, you know, in that and pace in that.
I think Matt about though after he was our man of the match.
I know, but at the same time, I want him fifth for Spurs, and it's got to be. I'm terrified of playing Matt up more than 2 or 3 consecutive games because he's got to be protected, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So
fair enough. Prediction then.
I was going to say, you can tell who's doing well and who's not. This prediction has gone on forever.
prediction against Spurs, Liverpool 2-1.
Okay, yeah, I'll match that again, 2-1.
Are we just not doing our spicy, or do you want to do a prediction for Everton?
Leicester. Leicester, I'll I think I'll go with that. Benitez won't be there. I'm not saying what I want or what I don't want, but I think Benitez might not be there. Why not? Let's go for a bounce back against Leicester at a 2-1 victory.
Winslow Disco, baby. Me and Price here on the Guinness and the Jager bombs, if that's the case.
Off Monday
we are
well.
Back on Thursday with Game On, which is going to be looking back at a week in history, which Duncan Ferguson is a massive part of. I think Jürgen Klopp is a massive part of the Reds' week in history. We've got a couple of games to play as well. That's out on Thursday. But for now, from myself, Ian Mills, from Andrew Price, Teddy McGiven and Phil Roberts, thank you so much. Please hit subscribe on the way out. See you next week.